We'll begin this evening's meeting of the Finance and Facilities Committee. And today is August 12th, a little after 6:07 p.m. Would you please take a moment and review the minutes from the June 10th Finance Meeting and let me know if they meet with your approval.
I'm good with the minutes.
Okay. Patrick?
Good.
Good. And Joe is not here. So I will move on to the second order of business then this evening, and that is the consultant's performance evaluation. Just to set this up for you, in the next month or so, you're going to start to see our capital project recommendations for the coming year, actually the present year, and those will be projects that will be taking place during the summer of 2014. And something that we started a couple of years ago was to put together a performance matrix in terms of how did things go over the past year with the group of professionals that we hired to do the professional workforce. In particular, I have the architects here, and then we also use typically in a lot of our work we'll use a civil engineer, which is Erickson Engineering. Then we use AMSCO Engineering that does our mechanical, electrical, and plumbing work. And then finally, over a number of years, we've had a need for a forensic or structural engineer, and it's DC Engineering. So we developed this matrix, and it goes, there's a number of overall qualifications, general skills necessary to perform the work. They're rated on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being the least desirable and 10 being the most desirable. So what I've done is I've gone through each of the engineers' services, and I've rated their how they've performed their the level of service in areas. And I don't know. I'll just go through this briefly. If you have any questions, design and processing, long range planning, short term planning, how did they act on behalf of owner consultants, professional organizations if they belong to any. The health, life, safety project, construction administration, and so on. Those are under the overall qualifications. And then also, I rated, in my belief, what are the general skills necessary to perform this type of work, which runs from the quality of work, responsiveness, communication, and so forth. I have found that all of the engineering services that we utilized over the past year certainly met or exceeded my level of expectations in terms of the level of service that they provided, and I am very happy with the way things went. Drew, you're not here, but what you're seeing is we've got on the smart board here, we have about 35 slides that we put together that will actually take you through the Hadley LMC project, and I will tell you that I was there as late as 5 o'clock this afternoon, and we are about 97%, 98%, 99% done. A couple of punch list issues that need to be resolved, but essentially the site is ready. It's been turned over to us. We have kids coming in the building tomorrow for Hadley startup. Teachers are back in the building today. I know Chris Abbott's going to begin taking the books that are in storage and putting them on the movable book carts that we have. Construction's done. All of the equipment has been delivered except for the reception cubicle area. Here are some shots of the front entrance that's been moved and built and so forth. So it's pretty exciting work, Drew. You'll get an opportunity to see it. We will let it run through this evening's Finance Committee, and then also we'll let it run through maybe the first portion of the board meeting so everybody, including the audience, gets an opportunity to see it and ask any questions. Patrick, if you have any questions about what you're seeing up there, please don't hesitate to ask. I'd be happy to answer. I sort of lived and breathed this project over the past couple of months. So, and I would tell you, I'm very proud of the folks that came in and did our work for us. Just unbelievably proud of our support services, our custodial and maintenance department, the work that they've accomplished this summer. This is a department. We had some significant roadblocks or issues this year. We had the Hadley LMC project. We had summer school over at Churchill. We had GECRC in our buildings at Lincoln this summer. So really, we had three of our five buildings having some some obstacles that presented challenges to our group, and I tell you, I walked the buildings again, like I said, this afternoon. I'm very, very proud of all everything that's been accomplished. So,
Bob, can I ask you, are you talking about the Matrix?
Yes, I am speaking of the Matrix.
And so these are all the different subgroups of people or professionals that do work for us?
That do work for us from an O&M perspective. These are the architects, the civil engineers, the structural engineers, and then the engineer that does our mechanical and electrical reviews.
Would you mind telling Patrick kind of the genesis of that report and how it's managed on an annual basis?
Yes, and I did speak earlier just briefly on that. You know, in a couple of weeks, along with capital project recommendations, I'm going to bring you a renewal of the FGM contract. And there's a master contract out there, and then every year there's addendums to that contract that are in regard to the work that's on our books. Okay, our work that we're proposing to do for the next fiscal year. And so a board member asked, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, well, how do you feel about their services, and how do you determine what was their level of service? So we sat down, and it was a good question. We sat down and developed this matrix. This wasn't something that, believe me, it was not an easy thing to create because, you know, these guys are in a job. I talk to them every day. If something's wrong, I typically address it right then and there. Where this gave us a little sort of some written documentation in terms of how I felt regarding the services that they performed. And these numbers or these ratings change from year to year. 2 years ago, I had a little bit of an issue with our mechanical electrical engineers. I thought they didn't perform well in a particular project they were given. So, you know, it isn't something that I just quickly go through. I spend some time. I review their services, give this matrix, and then what I do is I annually, this time of the year, usually the first quarter meeting, first finance committee in August, I present it to the finance committee so that they know how I feel as though these services were rendered.
Are these FGM? Are the other four or five?
Well, there's Ericsson, AMSCO, and then
those three. Do they have a relationship with FGM, or are they all independent contractors?
They're all independent contractors, all licensed and independent engineers, and they work for me. Work for the school district.
They work for you, okay.
Yeah, and, you know, I may have a meeting with Ericsson or with AMSCO and not have FGM in a room, but typically if it's about long-term planning or projects that are ongoing, I probably would have FGM in a room just so that we can all hear the conversation. And like when we had this, when we had our meetings for the Hadley LMC, it was frequently where we were meeting with FGM, Ericsson, well, maybe not so much Ericsson on this one because there weren't a lot of civil issues, but certainly DC Engineering and AMSCO and FGM were intricately involved in the preparation for this Hadley LMC project. So they work directly for us.
And Bob, do you, is there, how are we advised? I mean, you do this annually, and this is kind of pretty subjective, and, you know, everybody, I think, trusts your judgment on these types of things. But I'll just say from a personal saying, like a Better Business Bureau, do you get a third-party rating for these companies, or is there something like that?
No, I wouldn't say that there's a third-party rating system.
Okay.
This is really about the work that they perform for the district.
For you, okay.
And it's all about, you know, preparatory work, what's done prior to a particular project coming on the books,
yeah,
what's done during that during the project. And, you know, a big thing with me is availability, timeliness,
okay,
responsiveness, things of that nature. And then, of course, I sit back in about this time of year and say, hey, How did the project go? How could it have been improved? Were there issues out there, outstanding issues? And I will tell you that I was had some sleepless nights in April, May, and, you know, June as we're getting started on this project, because I tell you what, we're 2 weeks before school and we're done.
Yeah.
And that to me is amazing for the intricate work that was involved in beginning and finalizing this project. And like I said, give me a call one of these days if you ever want to just run over there and see it. They're kind of like my baby, so if you want to, I don't mind showing them off. I go over there once or twice a day and just kind of sit back and say, wow,
pat yourself
pretty
on
good.
Back.
Nice work.
That's pretty good work.
Nice work. Okay, any other questions on that issue? Yes.
I'm going to suck it off. I'm in the parking lot now. I'll be
okay. Okay, well, just knock on the back door. We'll let you in.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. No, hearing no other questions then. Then I'm going to move on to the updated check register and changes to the FOIA law. You know, this is something, at least with regards to the check register, this is something I've been thinking about doing for a while, okay? And what it is you know, Julie and I have talked about transparency. We've discussed transparency and how can we provide greater detail to our stakeholders. And the one item that I saw in this check register is we never really presented a description. We have the check number, the date, and we have a vendor, but never at an amount. We never really talked about what a particular check may be for. So we met with our Skyward folks and found that it was a pretty quick fix. They set us up with a template. We can go into our, and Skyward, by the way, is our software system. We can get in there now, download the information from period from the beginning of a period to the end of the period, and that will download the description area, and then I go in and just sort of eyeball description. Is there something I need to delete, or is there something I need to add? If information has a tendency to get a little too personal, then it might be something I would eliminate in a description. Or if I think I can add a little greater detail, I do. So what's nice now is it's in an Excel spreadsheet. We review it once or twice a month. We have it formatted. So hopefully it gives a little greater clarity in terms of what we're providing to our community. The board certainly will have an opportunity to see a little greater clarification with regards to descriptions. Finance committee board members know that if they have a question on a particular check, a quick email or a telephone call, you know, we do. If you go through our checks on a regular basis, you will notice the same names, almost the same names, same vendors coming up every month, because we do business with a large span of folks, but usually we have a pretty well established relationship, and in some cases, it's really the only individuals that are companies that we work with for a particular service or product or whatever that case may be. So this was an administrative function. I just wanted to show it to you so you know that we're moving forward to provide a little greater clarity and transparency in terms of information that we're providing to our community.
This format is what gets posted, Bob?
This will be posted.
Okay.
Now, this is for the month of June. We're going to start July 1st.
Yeah.
So the next check register that you'll be seeing at the next finance committee, because everything you're getting now, we didn't have a board meeting in July, so this is all June 30th information.
Okay.
The next check register, when you guys approve your bills on the night of a board meeting, I'll give authorization to push that information up right to our into the district website the next morning on Tuesday.
If Bob, just for clarity, the format, my understanding, this is something that Paul had brought to us, and it was kind of his thought.
Well, I don't know. I would say Paul and I started meeting really the first day that he was here, and I said, Paul, you know, there are some things that I would like to see change. He asked my thoughts. I said, well, you know, one of the things that I've kind of had planning on adjusting, two issues really, were the new check register format, and then we started getting into P-card conversations, and then finally, through conversations I've had with Paul, as well as a couple of board members, they've asked for a little bit of a change to our FOIA request sheet, and also give them some idea, meaning the board, give them some idea of the amount of time that it may take for us to fulfill a particular FOIA request. So this check register, kind of been in my mind for a while, and this was just July 1st was really the perfect opportunity to roll that out.
Well, this is really good.
It is.
I like the level of transparency, so kudos to both you guys for this.
Yeah, and I really want to echo what Bob said. Literally on the first day, he started talking to me about this. He had been thinking about this for a long time and knew that we needed to make a transition. And from my vantage point, I thought it was the right decision to make. He really ran with his bad boy and made this thing happen very quickly, without us having another finance committee meeting. This thing moved fairly quickly, so all of thanks needs to go to Bob and his team for pulling the sucker together.
So this Skyward application it sounds like it all gets dumped in here, but at the data, once you have the data in a warehouse, you can start slicing and dicing 9 different ways. Yeah. So you can start doing vendor relationships, whatever, Sam's Clubs, whatever. And you can
once it's in an Excel spreadsheet, I can do anything with it from there. That's what's nice about having the information. We take it right from our Skyward system. We hit the, for lack of a better term, dump button, and it goes right into an Excel spreadsheet for us, and it gives us all the information. And maybe an hour of staff time, additional staff time a month, not that much stuff. Okay, then we wanted to talk about the FOIA request, and particularly the FOIA log, I should say. The changes to the FOIA log. And as you know, we've been, I believe the Finance Committee, the board is aware that we've had some ongoing FOIA requests. And these are not, they are so significant that they really are eating up a lot of my department's time.
You mean they're relatively robust in there?
Their request.
Yeah.
And I had a request a couple of weeks ago, and I believe we denied that one, where they were looking, the individual was looking for 500 and some odd checks to be pulled. I estimated that to take, even if it was only 5 minutes per check, by the time my person gets the check number, associates that with the vendor, pulls it out, reviews, and gives me what I need to review prior to handing over the FOIA request, and then on the back side, taking that, refiling, and putting it back in the system. Even if it was only 5 minutes a check, that's 40 hours worth of work. Now, just to give you a little history, my department's undergone some rather significant changes in the past 3 to 4 years. We've eliminated 3 full-time positions in my department, and we reassigned. We have, just this year, we went from a director's level position down to a coordinator of fiscal services. So there's been a lot of change, and I think we're a pretty lean and mean department right now. So when you're looking for additional work, I think this request here over just a couple-week period totaled about, 20 hours of my staff time. And then typically, Drew asked the question, too, well, why don't you include in there how much attorney fees are costing you with regard to a particular FOIA request? And just off the top of my head, I would say it was probably about $1,200 of review time. Now, not that I go to the attorneys for every FOIA request, but I will go to them on maybe some of the more challenging ones. Some of these in here have been the more challenging variety. So what we're going to do, all the information is originally presented, but we're also going to get in, drop a column in here that will tell you approximately how much staff time, and if I ever get challenged on it, my people generally are Gail, accounts payable, and then Carolyn, my administrative assistant, they're maintaining a log.
Okay.
Now, this does not include any of my involvement. My involvement generally is a review and then a presentation to the individual that may want to come in and take a look at it.
Yeah, I guess my only comment here is let's understand all the work that you did was huge, and it's done. And you're solving the instance, but let's look at the grander scheme. I think is what I think Drew said, the transparency issue. And I think with this Skyward thing, we're resolving the issue, but we're resolving the concern at the same time as you address the issue. So I think with the Skyward thing, I don't say, for example, God forbid something happens again when you need 300 checks. I think with the Skyward system, it sounds like you could just boom, download, boom, export.
Well, that's
boom, right?
That's just for the accounts payable.
Okay.
And the check register. That's just a download.
Right, right, for the checks register. Right.
When you're talking about FOIA requests, these are all hands-on, individual type of related tasks. Like, you know, for if you see here, every check number there has to be pulled, vendor identified, and so forth. That's what takes a lot of time. The check processing, the new check register, really is. I'm hoping that this provides greater transparency and will eliminate the need or the request under FOIA laws.
Right, right.
And I guess, and I think Bob and I've talked about this, and I like where you've gone thus far in terms of staff time to fulfill the request. I would like to have a little bit more granularity in that. I'd like a dollar amount associated with that. I'd like the attorney time. And quite honestly, Bob's time is valuable. And that should be, you know, if that's an hour or a half hour, that should be listed. I mean, I guess I think of this the same way that, you know, a consultant would bill a client. You know, this is what it costs. Now, we can't charge them for that, but it would be nice to be able to say, you know, this is what it costs us for FOIA requests, the total cost.
Just to give you a rule of thumb, it's $25 an hour. And if you have 20 hours right here, it's $400 worth of staff time. And I mentioned earlier that just off the top of my head, I believe we spent about $1,200 in attorney's fees over the past month dealing with FOIA requests. So,
okay.
You know, I can provide that verbally at any given time. I don't know that I want to get to that level of detail in this because it is a public report. I'll be happy. You know, you send me a quick email, Bob, what do you estimate is the cost of FOIAs over this past month? I can always do that. But
okay.
I just thought I would, and then it would be up to you whether you care to make public comment on it.
I guess I would make the request that let's report. I'd like to be able to report to the board the costs of the staff costs, your costs, attorney costs, broken out on these FOIA requests for July.
And just for July, or
this one would be. Well, I kind of want to go back further because Bob just started.
This would be something I'm going
in July. So
can I ask a question?
Sure.
The purpose, is the purpose to present something to the community that
this is what it costs.
This is what it costs, and you know, it's time and effort to do this, and they need to understand that FOIA request. It's not free.
Right.
Okay.
It's free to them, but there is a cost.
I guess my only, if I was to play the devil's advocate, I would say, so, you know, kind of thing. That's part of the organization as a state institution, as a federal institution. I have every right to do that. Let's just say FOIA got up to $1 million. You know, I'm going to go, not $1 million, let's say $10,000. Does that change the request or the reasoning for the request?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, I think it's more of a transparency issue. It's like,
okay.
This is our cost of doing business.
Okay.
And I think that the community needs to understand what that, from a transparency standpoint, what that is.
Okay.
And again, I'm, you know, I'm not looking for a lot of detail, and I'm really not trying to create more work for Bob and his department. I know they have a lot of things on their plate, but I think it would be good for the board to know and the community to know what our cost level is for FOIAs. And I think since Bob's got the one, the July, he's using this new format, I guess I would like to see that. And if the board sees this broken down by staff hours applied to a rate plus attorney costs plus Bob's time, that totals X.
Well, Patrick, you're correct in what you're saying, in that so what? That's the cost of doing business. In a lot of cases, that is the case. I do have the ability to decline a particular request, and we have decided to decline or not fulfill a particular FOIA, and the term that we use is unduly burdensome to the district. Because what happens if I've got to literally take 40 hours of my staff time in a particular week? Because you only have 5 days to respond to these.
Yeah.
Take 40 days out of one of my employees' work week, that shuts that person down for an entire work. It shuts the department down.
Yeah.
They have to focus on this. So I do have some thin latitude. But they are always given an access to an individual that they can always go to, and that my decision to deny a particular FOIA request can be reviewed. I would probably lose that on appeal. Yeah. But the fact of the matter is that if I feel as though this truly is unduly burdensome, then I'll exercise that authority.
Yeah, and I totally respect that, Bob, and I would support your decisions on any of those instances. And, in those conversations, I think, from my perspective as a board member, I want to see that if it's number of hours, money for attorneys to do these, or staff time, I want to take a step back and say, okay, if we're seeing a trend, because it's always checks, or seeing a trend because it's always vendor management or some janitorial service or something like that. As a board member, I want to take a step back and say, okay, do we have does something smell here that we need to address versus, like this one, probably 700, 900 checks. I don't know how many we've supplied through this request, but I think what it's done, it's triggered a transparency conversation. It's triggered some systematic changes on your side for this check register. So I think it's done a good job, and I just use FOIA as a litmus.
Yeah, and you know what? This was a good opportunity to put to pen. We used to talk, I think that took me an hour. I think it took me an hour and a half. Now we know, because I have been tracking. The time that's dedicated to fulfilling a particular request, Carolyn and Gail both are tracking their time, so I know how much they're devoting of their day. So that's just something we plan on continuing to do. I think it's good information to have, and we're just going to make these administrative changes, in the future. Okay?
Are you seeing a trend with FOIAs?
Well, they've gone up significantly in the past 3 months. Significantly. Where things were quiet for a long, long time, there were some FOIA requests made when we had the conversations around Think Tank. But pretty much anything. My department, I supply the FOIAs, the responses to the FOIAs, but I haven't had someone actually come in and sort of review what we've been doing in my office. So it is what it is. We'll deal with it accordingly. But at least now we have a base point that we know it takes X number of hours to fulfill a particular request. So
it'll help me, Bob. It'll help me when I see
good information.
These things. Like, oh, okay. Well, somebody asked about that. Maybe I need to think about that.
Sure.
Too.
Okay, I'm going to, again, we've got to finish by about 10-2, and we've got the next one that I wanted to go through, which is a little bit out of order, but we're going to move up to number 3 now, which was the annual review of Board Policy 4.30, and this board policy is around operational services from the revenue and investment perspective. Per Board Policy 4.30, I, as the Chief Financial Officer of the district, my responsibility is to annually review the investments and to give the board a brief report in terms of are we meeting board policy and are our administrative procedures in place to keep the appropriate checks and balances in hand. I believe they are. I would say the intent of Board Policy 4.30 is the safekeeping of public funds, and that to me is my utmost and first responsibility, is to make sure that we have our investments appropriately invested. You know, this is a very difficult economic climate, even today, 5 years after the recession hit, and yet you look at our investment report, we're still only getting 0.25% or 0.33%, or I don't even think we've attained 0.5% yet. Just to give you some idea, 6-7 years ago when I came here, we were receiving about $1.2 million a year in investment income. Yeah. And this, just this past year, I think we had about $111,000, $112,000. So one-tenth of what we were receiving. Now, you know, equate that to 2 full-time positions. That's 10 full-time positions, 12, 14 full-time positions, salary and benefits. So it's a pretty...
So Bob, so I didn't miss that. It was $1 million reduction, roughly.
We were
$1 million
down. Yeah. We were receiving $1.2 million, and I think this past year it was $112,000.
So over $1 million less.
Over $1 million less in this one revenue line item.
Yeah.
Okay. So again, I believe the intent of 4.30 is to ensure the safekeeping of public funds, provide for adequate liquidity. And then also, we design our plans to attain a market level of interest, again, that still remain at historical lows. I've attached a copy of 4.30 for your review. And just to give you a little background here, we have 3 new board members that came on in May. And one of the first orders of business that you did was to approve the financial institutions that we do business with. And there are 4 of them. We deal with PMA, which is they manage our investments for us. You have MB, Financial Bank. Then we have 2 CDs, one each at the Bank of Wheaton and the bank here in Glen Ellen. And we just, because they're local institutions, we keep about $1 million in investments wrapped up at those 2. Really, the big chunk of our money is it with PMA that has a whole series of investments that you see monthly on the investment report, your treasurer's report. And then we have funds. It's our operating fund. It's our checking account, if you will. That's with MB Financial. So we use MB for the day-to-day operations. We use PMA as sort of our investment house.
Bob, in the recent history, have we done any repos? Repurchase agreements?
No, I have not. What I have done, or what we do, is you look at our investment report, and everything's at $249,200. It's right underneath that $250,000 threshold, and that's basically to stay within the national guidelines that, how shall I put it? You have a maximum, anything greater than $250,000, you lose it federal insurability. So basically, we maintain our investments in this manner. That's the way we've done it for a number of years. And that's just the way we've done it for a number of years. Annually, I do go out and I review. I perform an independent review. I ask MB, PMA, the banks that we deal with, and I review their financial statements and their auditor statements, and then I make a determination whether I feel as though these people are certainly worthwhile to continue to do business with. And the 4 institutions that I've named are fairly well known. I think, you know, they certainly, like with an MB, has a national presence, and I feel good, and I sleep well at night knowing that our funds are invested in particular institutions.
This is just in my wheelhouse, and it just grinds me that we're limited to what we can do, and there's so many safe vehicles out there that if we could just have a conversation to get at least some of that money back. So the repurchase agreements, when I read the document, is, you know, that's an opportunity to get a 3 or 4 bips above the interest rate right now, if we could possibly look into that. But it's not for tonight's conversation. Paul, what type of investments were...
We had to stay along these same lines where we had...
CDs,
yep.
All that stuff?
It's a national recommendation. Certainly may go outside of it, but you lose the security of the insurance. So we struggled with it as well. We had two investment bankers on my previous board, and very similar to you, like, boy, very safe pieces out there.
Money market funds.
Yeah.
Earn 2 bips off of that versus our interest.
Well, if you even read Illinois school code, which I did not include in if you need a little coffee table reading, I can certainly give you a copy of that. But there are, it is narrowly defined what I really, according to Illinois school code, and so forth, in terms of how and what I can invest in.
Yeah.
So I will tell you that there were business managers 5, 6, 7 years ago, as that financial meltdown was occurring. There was a case in California, Michigan. There were 4 of them that I know that essentially took the districts to their knees because they weren't using. They stepped outside that narrow band of appropriate investments. And they've lost a lot of money. I think they were investing in pension funds or whatever the case may be. But it was less than sort of very conservative, typical approach that people in my seat would take.
And there certainly were things that used to be looked at as very safe investments that we found out weren't.
Yeah, look at I wasn't in the business 20 years ago, but I mean, you know, there was a long time when the stock market was a great investment. But you saw what happened 5 years ago with the stock market cut in half.
Spoken.
So, any other questions on this policy? I will consider this as having been presented and reviewed, and we'll bring it back to you again next August, essentially with the same type of.
We already voted on it this year, didn't we?
Yeah, you had voted in May to remain with the fund. And so, just so you know, MB is sort of our day-to-day checkbook. That's where we run our payroll accounts and our accounts payable, and we keep some money there.
Yeah.
Our big investment house really is PMA, and there are millions tied up there. And then I do business with 2 local banks also.
Bob, it looks like the last time that this went through policy was in 12. So
that was probably last. Well, it was last year.
Last year we went through and. And as I recall, we updated some of the numbers.
Some of the language in there. And I think, you know, what they do is they make sure that they're in alignment with press. And I think this is probably one of the policies that came up under, whether it's every 2 or 3 or 4 years, and it was updated accordingly at that time. But that's something different than the review that I present to you folks annually.
So by you presenting it to the finance committee, we have
I have fulfilled my end of the policy
on an annual basis to discuss that section of policy and kind of the state of how our finances are. With an investment
sample. Well, the last number 11 here says the investment policy shall be approved by the Board of Education following review and recommendation by the Finance Committee. So it's now been before the Finance Committee.
Do you want an approval that we reviewed it?
Unless I hear something otherwise, I would say it's been approved and we're in agreement.
I'm good with this.
Okay. The next order of business then this evening is I just wanted to talk briefly about the TIF district that we've had a presentation on. I attended a meeting, and I gave you some really basic information with regards to TIF. Give you a little history now. There are 4 TIFs in Glendale Heights that are part of our school district. They are located at the corner of North Avenue and Bloomingdale. Those 4 corners are all TIFed. They're all related. They're independent TIFs. They're all related through the Village of Glendale Heights. They run them. We have been before there. I sit on that joint review board also. That's just sort of the procedures. All the school districts, all the intergovernmental bodies, there are 7 or 8 typically, sit on that group. We have a less than enthusiastic relationship with Glendale Heights just because we've asked for a little greater participation. There are certain rules and regulations, procedures that are to be followed. We don't know. We're not in agreement that those procedures have always been followed so that they are in the best interest of all the intergovernmental bodies. But, you know, all I am is a vote of one. I'm one of eight members that vote on that joint review board. So I just want to give you a little history. You've got four TIFs located in the northern end of our property. Last year, 2 years ago, the TIF district was approved for downtown Glen Ellyn here. And just to give you a little idea of its sheer size, the downtown TIF incorporates 4.65% of the total EAV in the district. So we have a total EAV of about $1.3 billion. 4.65% of that encompasses the downtown area. Now I want to talk specifically about the TIF district, and they call it the Roosevelt Road Park Boulevard Tax Increment Financing District. Most of this district is going to be, well, it's all going to be along Roosevelt Road, that quarter. Very little of it really is within our boundaries. A much greater portion is District 89, which is south of Roosevelt Road, and then all of it is within the boundaries of District 87, the high school district. Prior to making some changes in the original presentation, our total exposure to TIF was about $5.8 million. There was some outcry against including the housing, the Roosevelt Road multi-residential housing that was originally included in this proposal. The village has gone back and re-updated their request, and now they've removed all of the multi-residential housing along that area, and our involvement is now $2.8 million. $2.8 million of $1.3 billion is like one quarter of 1%.
Yeah.
Very, very little influence to our taxes. We don't have all the boards are meeting tonight and in the next couple of days, and the boards will be giving their assistant soup or business manager their sort of direction on how you would like us to vote. My feeling is right now, because of where the TIF is located, the properties involved, Roosevelt Road really is sort of a gateway to Glen Ellyn. I think you can see that certain areas of it certainly could use some updating and some upgrading. And all the requirements, there's 12 or 13 individual requirements that need to be met for an area to be TIF'd, if you will. And we believe that those criteria have been met. And I believe that this would probably, for us, would be a good recommendation for us to go and move forward with this TIF. Now, Joe asked me to request the village to get on board with impact fees. He specifically referred to teardown fees. We've also spoke to the village on the downtown TIF of discussing dollar sharing with regards to surpluses that are declared annually. They have to approve a budget and then approve a financial review every year. So we went to them a couple of years ago and said, hey, why don't we, we'll be happy to move forward with this recommendation, but we would like a review and then the possibility of splitting some of those surplus sharing. And we were roundly defeated and denied. They're not willing to share. And I don't mean that as a negative thing, because we have a good relationship with the other governmental partners. It's just this one, meaning the downtown TIF, they were not willing to discuss it. My belief is it's probably the same stature they're going to take with regards to Roosevelt Road. Again, given the overall picture and scheme of things, it is very, very, it's a very, very small piece of our district. So
who gets the surplus?
Typically?
Yeah.
Well, not typically. The village gets the surplus.
Okay, so the village gets a surplus, but everybody else relies on those same taxes.
Well,
don't get any of that surplus. Where we left it alone and the taxes went up, we get a part of that.
That's correct. Now, If I were to say that at a public village meeting, I would be scolded for making a comment like that because, you know, essentially what a TIF does. Well, I mean, they think I'm portraying it on a district's behalf. What happens is I present a levy for $25 million. We're going to get that $25 million. It just gets apportioned a little bit differently because those in the TIF district are frozen.
Okay.
So they're only going to be paying that sort of stated level where that burden is spread out amongst the other taxpayers. That is the way it works now. They generally don't share in surpluses. They're unwilling because they can fund other projects. Maybe they, you know, and it takes a while for these things to get on hold, to get afoot, and to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
How long is this one?
They're all 23 years, it's decided by agreement to pull it back earlier. Like, let's say it's been phenomenally successful and they want to pay it off and move on after 15 years. But it can also be extended for another 23 years. That's more typically the way something will work, is they'll extend it.
Well, I'm not saying that we should say that in a meeting. I just think that it's an interesting fact that we're involved in the community and the agreement for development plans.
Dean, I agree with you. So, and I will tell you, the last time we voted, the three school districts voted, actually it was only the two school districts because all of Glen Allen, the downtown TIF is just 41 and 87. So what we did is we had our attorneys prepare a written statement that the districts read at the TIF meeting. We voted against it, put it to bed, and that was the last of the conversation. And you know, that downtown TIF district is moving slowly. If you look, you know, it came on board about 2 years ago and really nothing has changed. Now, that doesn't mean to say there isn't a lot of work going on behind the scenes. Just what is obvious is that nothing has happened thus far.
Yeah.
Okay, any questions on TIF? You know, one other thing that I wanted to talk to you briefly about, you have a map here. And just to give you some, I'm a visual, I'm a reference kind of guy. This essentially runs from just a few storefronts east of Park. And what I have here, it includes areas like the, I think it's called the Parkside Transmission, the car lot that's there, Potbelly Sandwiches, and then as far east as it goes is, you know, that the diamond store at Roosevelt. There's five parcels that run from there to Binney's. Those five parcels are included. That whole subdivision where Binney's and Trader Joe's, that is not part of the TIF. So our TIF really runs along Roosevelt from, let's say, that area right around Trader Joe's to Binney's, and runs west about, I don't know, 5 or 6 or 7 blocks. But it's a point of reference. Burger King, Potbelly, the car lot, Fannie Mae, that is all included in the TIF.
Because everything on the south side of Roosevelt Road is actually in.
That's 89. Yeah. And that's pretty significant.
Yeah.
Their exposure there.
Yeah.
And it's not just along Roosevelt Road. They've gone back a block or two also.
They went to the road behind them. Yeah.
That's correct. Where ours is just really right up and down Roosevelt. Couple little outlying parcels have been sort of captured in that district, but for the most part, it's that area. So I see it's approaching 7 o'clock. I know that you're going to need to talk about the planning for the elementary innovation labs. So if you have any questions, as with anything, if you have any questions or concern on a particular topic that we're covering in the evening, call me, email me, you know, stop by, whatever you want to do, and I'll be happy to.
Well, just a quick question on the TIF. Are you making a recommendation to us that we would approve the villages?
That's what I'm saying tonight. Not knowing what the other school boards are going to vote.
So tentatively? Now,
tentatively, I would say yes, we move forward and okay. we're in agreement that we will support it. That could change. 87's meeting is tonight, and 89 is due to have one shortly. Typically, the school districts vote with one another. If we're one is for it, we're all for it. If one is against, we're against
and
it.
We're going to be asking for direction.
That's
not a vote. Just to clarify, we'll ask the board tonight, a little bit later on, for a direction.
That's
so, Bob, we don't take a vote on this one.
Right.
You'll give us a consensus direction for Bob to take to the village and to be working with the other districts.
Yeah, that's on August 22nd is my next meeting. And again, provide me with directs. Just tell me in which direction you want me to go. Yay or nay?
Gotcha.
Okay. All right, then the final item that we have to get to this evening is the plan for the elementary school innovation labs. I have given you packets of information here. It was really too big for us to email.
We wouldn't be able to print it at home
anymore. No, so we just pulled it out.
So what you have here really are site plans. You have some very preliminary budgets, and then you have a timeline in terms of the work schedule. You see some pretty lofty numbers there with regards to construction budgets. Keep in mind that these are just very preliminary plans. Nothing is written in stone. They can all change. We're looking for you from the Finance Committee this evening would be support in terms of allowing us to move forward with continuing to do the work that's necessary in the front end. In particular, we have a $300,000 figure out there that we would like to receive the support and the approval of the board in 2 weeks that will allow us to engage the architects. And it will allow us to provide for sort of behind-the-scenes work that we need to do before we can begin the initial stages of construction design and so forth. We're not anywhere near that. We have very, very conceptual, very sort of 50,000 elevation look in terms of what the labs themselves may look like. The work that we'll be doing will be soil borings, schematic design. There's an allowance for additional schematic design work. Total dedicated to FGM is about $191,000. And then we spoke about, for this size and scope of a project, we really do need to get a construction manager involved here because they will help us with telling us, hey, are these numbers good numbers? Do you think there's support to them? Do we need to go higher? Can we go lower? And then also, these are pretty tricky. Not so much Franklin's, but when you get into Lincoln and Churchill, those are going to be very intricate, sort of precision demolition and reconstruction work. I have a director of buildings and grounds, and I have a lot of hands-on time that I devote to the month or to the summer capital projects, but those are nowhere near sort of the level of expertise that I or anyone in the district can bring to a particular project. When you get into the Churchill Lincoln, you're looking at starting, let's say, the day kids get out of school, and you're looking at least in those buildings worth continuing into November or else right up to Christmas break. And that's another thing that one of the reasons that we would want to bring in a construction manager is they'll be able to tell us whether these timelines are accurate, are they good, solid, reasonably attainable goals that we have in mind here. Mm-hmm. You know, I can deal with the architects day in and day out, but they aren't in there doing the actual construction work. And there's a lot of detailed, intricate work that needs to occur at these sites. When you look at the Churchill plan or you look at the Lincoln plan, you're essentially cutting the central area of the building off for a number of months while you reconstruct that area. And one of the big things that we've talked about with regards to Lincoln is sort of getting rid of reconstruction that central rotunda area and build something that promotes greater movability of kids throughout the building from east to west, improve sight lines, you get kids to move more easily. You know, you get caught in a jam at Lincoln, the kids, they need to go in front of the rotunda, behind the rotunda. It could be moving from east to west in the building into the multi-purpose room for lunch. Kids going down to the east end of the property for gym, coming into the office. There's any number of reasons for doing this type of work that we're recommending be completed. This work will occur initially at Franklin. Franklin was my choice. To be quite honest with you, it's probably the easiest site for us to work with because about 5-6 years ago, we did that stormwater work at Franklin, and that was built with about 10,000 feet. Meaning we can put up, I believe, about a 10,000 square foot addition to that building, and we will have accounted for it because we oversized that stormwater structure. Just like we did when we went in and did the Hadley work. That underground stormwater detention area has been designed to have a footprint of a 10,000 square foot addition. So we did some advanced planning when we did those sites, when we built those sites, and we did it purposely long term, so if we needed to get back in there, we wouldn't have to do anything substantial to the site. So again, we've chosen Franklin to begin it, just because of where it's located, where these labs will be located on the building, the accessibility to the area. They are essentially, you know, we can get the work done without having to be sort of directly involved with the kids, it's on the sort of the back end, the I guess it'd be northwest section of the building. So we would look to do Franklin summer of 2014, and really besides this and some roofing projects that we would recommend doing next year, this would be the essence of our capital projects for next year. So what we're looking for this evening will be support from the Finance Committee. It's going to be discussed at the board level a little later this evening, and we will be looking for a commitment to spend up to $300,000 in professional fees regarding the initial implementation, and all this is sort of preparatory work. It's always on the front end is when we do this work and spend these dollars. This amount, I have budgeted $400,000 in the 2014 budget for professional services. I've put $300,000 towards this implementation of the innovation labs, and then $100,000 into capital projects, so a total of $400,000 in that line item, and it has been budgeted for this evening, or for the budget that you'll be approving later this evening.
And that's very consistent with what we talked about in July.
Correct. I think I wasn't there, but from what the minutes that I've read, and my understanding is it's pretty much right on the money in terms of what you folks had discussed previously.
The only thing I would add, if we did move forward with this, this would not inhibit any, nor would we, it would align with any future expansion or construction. These are here for the future. This is not a short-term solution to anything that we see these flexible classroom spaces as a long-term solution that would connect to any possible expansion or any other work that happens at our elementary school.
I will tell you that we've had meetings, dozens of hours of meetings with our architects, and I have clearly stated, when you look at these sites and you look at our buildings, these are areas we spend the money now. We will not touch them on any future building projects. These will be sort of the core or the essential elements as we move forward with our master facility planning. So I'm committing to you that these areas will stay. They're not going to go away with a change in master facility planning or anything else like that, you know, unless I'm given direction to do something different. We have clearly stated to our architects that these are the essential elements that we want to build or continue to enhance our facilities around.
Bob, just so I understand, I'm looking at your conditions in the budget number. This is the base bid, and then there are these are things that you want to add on top of the base bid, correct? So if I total all the lows, I would get a total number?
If you added up all the lows, you would come in at 12 million. If they went on the high end, it'd be 17.
So this is the base bid includes these alternatives?
Does not include the alternatives.
So if we were going to do everything all at once, I'd add all of those across.
Correct.
Okay. So correct.
Now, keep in mind, I've committed, I brought the board a recommendation last December that we would make a commitment to find an area that we would begin to fund some sort of capital development. We had this conversation December, January around the levy, and we made a decision that we would begin to fund some capital projects or some different ways of looking at our buildings through the use of existing fund balances. We looked at property acquisition that really didn't have legs and didn't move forward. We've talked about Innovation Labs. It's been going on really for a couple of years, and we use innovation / STEAM. They're the same things. But when we started this master facility plan over a year ago, this was one of the first things that came up on the agenda, are enhanced learning spaces for kids. What would it look like? And again, STEAM goes away, these classrooms are still going to stay here. This is just a classroom, a fancy name for a classroom. It's an innovation lab, but they will always be spaces to educate our kids. They will not go away.
Probably the best way to say it, they're flexible classroom spaces. Yeah.
So this is essentially the IR concept applied to these different schools.
Well, these are innovative classrooms. If you look at your integrated resources, that kind of gave you little cutout spaces, like you would take six existing classrooms and make it four, and those two other classrooms would be maybe where small groups of kids could be. Those spaces in these rooms would sort of be built right in that concept.
Okay. So it's essentially IR 2.0.
IR on steroids.
I'm good with that.
Okay. Just to give you some idea, you could go over, and in the new Hadley Library, we have two labs there. And, you have great learning spaces for kids, but we've also given them spaces where 6, 8, or 10 kids can get together and meet individually or with their small groups. We have a lot of very flexible, innovative, cutting-edge types of learning areas in this new library. We've got our quiet reading room. You've got three group spaces for 8 to 10 kids. You've got a lab there that's walled off by what we call the nano wall. That holds about 30 kids. There's a lot of different spaces in that one library area that will hold flexible and a multitude of different learning styles and abilities. So, I wanted to present this to you this evening. We're looking for support from the Finance Committee to enter into an agreement with our architects and our other professional services contractors to begin this work. Again, this is pretty timely because, I will tell you that when we started talking about the Hadley Library, I always figure it's 18 months from initial conversation to project completion. We're less than that now. We're at about 10, 11 months. Okay, so this is something that I've chosen Franklin just because of its ease of an area that we'd be able to work at, a site that we'll be able to work in and get the job done quickly and on time.
And again, so I read this, there are two of the schools have underwater detention issues that you were looking to correct.
Every one of our sites has water, stormwater issues. We have sites right now, like when I did that little parking lot here at Forest Glen a couple years ago, that I mean, we were right at the tipping point then. The village had me come in and put a little stormwater system in there, not nearly as on the scale of what we did at Hadley or Franklin, but certainly something there that will capture any existing stormwater. Forest Glen is at the absolute top end. I mean, we even touch like a small addition will require stormwater. We made a conscious decision a number of years ago that if our sites are going to require work, we would provide for underground detention just because we're in an inner ring suburb. We need to maximize our green space for outdoor classrooms and for kids in general to get out of the buildings on a number of issues. So we made that decision that if we're going to bring a project recommendation forward, first and foremost, we're going to be looking at underground detention. And as part of this conversation, if you look at Lincoln on a couple of different points, you know, we don't have any off-street parking there. We have the ability to put underground detention in. So we would be able to address a couple of issues by putting a small parking lot and underground detention under what is the east end of the building and the single home that sits on the corner.
Sue's going to help us out with that. So with that, I think we'll need to conclude this portion of the meeting.